This year is brought to you by TorahWeb.org.
Thank you, Rabbi Trump. Shosav Shachter, Shosav Mordasra. The Torah introduces the Asaras HaDibros Ve'edabel Kim is Kol HaDvarim Ha'ela. The Torah employs of the different Shemos Hashem. The Torah introduces the Asaras HaDibros with the Shem Elokim. Rashi, quoting from the Mechilta, says, Ein Elokim Eladayan Lihipara. The sense of Elokim, what Elokim expresses is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a judge who holds us accountable. Many mitzvahs are introduced by Yedaber Hashem or Moshe Leimon. But by the Aseres HaDibros, so the Torah makes a point of introducing it as Vayedaber Elokim. So in a shir on Aseres HaDibros, the Rav Zichron Levracha explains what the amkos of this mechilta is. Throughout Maaseh Bereishis, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also described as Elokim. Bereishis bar Elokim, Vayomer Elokim, Vayomer Elokim, all the Asarim Ma'amoros are Vayomer Elokim. Elokim signifies order, law. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world that functions according to natural law. And that's why the Bria is attributed to Elokim, because Elokim expresses that idea. HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the author and architect of a system of law. So the world isn't random. The world functions according to set natural law. And hence, the Bria is described as Bereishis Bara Elokim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only created natural physical law, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu created natural moral law as well. The Gemara in Yuma famously differentiates two types of mitzvahs. There are mishpatim and chukim. Mishpatim are those which are intuitive. Din hu sheyikasevu, unlike a chok, which means something which is engraved, something which needs to be legislated, because otherwise on our own we couldn't and wouldn't intuit. But a mishpat is something which is intuitive. It's it's natural moral law. So some of the Torah's moral law is natural and intuitive, and some of it is not intuitive. Some of it is not something that we would have naturally known, recognized, and discerned. There are many midos that the Gemara says in Erevin that almatle nitna Torah. So we would have derived the tzniyus from looking into the Bria and seeing how a cat behaves, etc. There are many aspects of moral law which are natural, and others are chukim. So the Rav explains that philosophical distinction between mishpatim and chukim has really very, very far-reaching practical implications and repercussions. And that's as follows. What will it be if a person says he's going to defy natural physical law? No, I'm not going to abide by, I'm not going to acknowledge, I'm not going to abide by the law of gravity. So he's going to go out, he has a porch off his 20th floor penthouse apartment, and he's going to step off of that porch because I don't feel bound, no one's going to tell me what to do, I don't feel bound by natural physical law. So it's not only that he's going to have to give a din v'cheshbon la'acha me'ev eshem shana to the Ribbono Shel Olam for his brazenness of defying the Ribbono Shel Olam's natural law, but the consequences are going to be immediate. He's going to fall and he's going to die. So natural law, even though the ultimate that the Rambam writes based on the Chazals in the 11th of the Yud Gimel Yikarim, that the ultimate Tzchar V'Onesh is of course in Olam Haba, it's not in Olam Hazeh, but natural physical law has its, if a person defies it, it has consequences in Olam Hazeh as well. So the Rav explains the same is true for natural moral law. Natural moral law also, because it's natural, So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wove it into the very fabric of human society. And when natural moral law is rejected, so it's not only that there's going to be a din v'cheshbon la'acha me'ev esrim, there is, but not only is there going to be a din v'cheshbon la'acha me'ev esrim, but there are immediate consequences to defying natural moral law the same way there are immediate consequences to defying natural physical law. You know, in reflecting historically, so that there's no obvious point to begin. So somewhat arbitrarily, we'll go back to the 60s. So in the 60s, American society began an assault, not only, excuse me, so just coming back to the Mechilta, so V'yedaber Elokim eis kol ha'dvarim ha'ele le'emos, and the Mechilta says, the Aseres HaDibros are not chukim. Everything in the Aseres HaDibros, these are natural moral law. And V'yedaber Elokim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the sense of Dayan, meaning not only Dayan in Olam Haba, but Dayan in this world as well, that the consequences will also be immediate for defying natural moral law the same way they are immediate for defying natural physical law. So in the 60s, American society began an assault, began defying natural moral law. The so-called, again, it's somewhat arbitrary to start with the 60s. I don't know, maybe if I were even older, so maybe I'd be inclined to start in the 50s. What happened in the 60s had it roots in the 50s as well. But in the 60s, the so-called revolution, in the 60s, the rejection of traditional morality, the rejection of authority, the widespread disdain for one's parents, one's elders who represented that traditional authority, was an assault on moral law, natural moral law. If a person, you know, wears shatnez, if he has a linen in the collar of his woolen suit, so there will be a din v'cheshbon la'acha me'ev esrim for going against Ritzon Hashem. But it's not going to cause the disintegration of society because people are walking around wearing shatnez. But when when people defy natural moral law, so the consequences happen in Olam Hazeh as well. They happen in Olam Hazeh as well. It's sort of the flip side of Eilu Dvarim She'olam Ochel Perasein Be'olam Hazeh Ve'Karen Kayemes Lo'olam Haba. So this is the flip side of that in terms of our various Chochmanu Litzlan. If one didn't understand the Rav's drasha in the abstract, so all one has to do is look into American society and see what has happened. The implosion of American society, it's just simply disintegrating, and it's disintegrating because of its rejection of natural moral law. The Gemara says that Yitzur Shel Adam is Mischadish Shel B'chol Yom. Miskabel Shel B'chol Yom, Mischadish Shel B'chol Yom. The Yetzer Hara is never content. The Yetzer Hara is never satisfied. Once the Yetzer Hara conquers one position, so then it pushes forward to the next position. And that's also the immorality of the 60s. It began with premarital znus, extramarital znus, and once that became accepted. Once the Yetzer Hara had won that battle, and American society approved of that, so then the Yetzer Hara pushed its assault forward to the point where with things that people in with the most I don't know you couldn't have had a sordid enough imagination in the 60s and the 70s to imagine where the world is today. There's a famous drasha where the Rav in the 70s he said this. He said that Western society is neurotic. That's what he saw in the 70s. We, like the pasuk in the Tochacha, Boker Toma Mitein Erev, Erev Mitein Boker. We, if only we could go back to the 70s. If only we could go back to the 60s. Why? Because Yitzur Shel Adam is Mischadish Lev B'chol Yom. The Yitzhar is not content. Once one part of natural moral law has been undermined, has been decimated, so then it presses its attack forward. And increasingly, more and more of natural moral law is destroyed. And Yetzer Shel Adam Mischadish Lev B'chol Yom, so it presses its attack further in another sense as well. Originally, the attack was on moral truth. Moral truth can't stand in the way of self-gratification. At a certain point, people figured out, well, if we don't have to let moral truth stand in the way of personal gratification, why should objective truth, factual truth, stand in the way of moral gratification either, of personal gratification either? So today, we live in a world where there's no objective reality. There's no objective reality anymore. People use their pronouns, call me them. People, there's no, you fill out a birth certificate, so the child is non-binary. The child's not a boy, the child's not a girl. It's lunacy. And it's beyond irrational. But it's Yitzur Shel Adam Mischadish Lev B'chol Yom. It goes further and further and further. And it erodes further and further and further. And that's what we see. There's no more objective truth. They discover that the president of Harvard is guilty of plagiarism. So what does she do? She gives a clap and says, "No, I stand by the integrity of my work." What do you mean you stand by the integrity of the work? They can show word for word. They can show word for word that you plagiarized. No, there's no truth. You don't have to. There's no objective reality that a person is held to anymore. There's no standard that a objective reality is not a standard by which a person is measured anymore. The Beis Halevi has a comment in his Sefer on Chumash. I think maybe it's in brackets. I was looking for it last night. I couldn't find it again. I'm sorry. I wanted to read it to you. But the Beis Halevi says that apikorsim also have emunah. And what he means by that in context is that they have an irrational faith in their own apikorsis. So there are many examples of that. That they cling to their non-belief with a tenacity and reject any kind of objective disproving of that with it's a blind faith. Because some also have faith. The pshat in that is that the Ribbono Shel Olam endowed us with a capacity for belief. Okay, so we're supposed to, together with Masorah, together with reason, so we're supposed to channel and use that capacity correctly for belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for belief in His Torah. But when a person chooses not to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not to believe in His Torah, he doesn't lose that capacity for belief. he just transfers that, he misdirects the belief that people had in communism back in the 30s, that there were people who went back to Stalinist Soviet Union, only to be then slaughtered by Stalin in some of his purges. They had such emuna. A person, especially a Jew, is a ma'amin, but people in general have a capacity for emuna. That's what you look in modern society. So modern society isn't content to have the license to engage in their immorality. No, they make an absolute out of the immorality. They impose it upon everyone else. It becomes a new secular religion. That's what the Beis Halevi said, that apikorsim also have emunah. The question is, in what a person has emunah? A person has emunah in the truth, a person has emunah in what tradition teaches us, in what reason points to, or a person's emunah is directed elsewhere. The current state of American society, where there's no acknowledgement of truth, again, just factual truth, not only moral truth, there's not even factual truth anymore. It's nihilism. It's nihilism. There's no other word for it. What are the implications for us? So the implications are at least twofold. These reflections are somewhat, just association, stream of consciousness. So they're certainly not comprehensive. Hopefully comprehensible, but certainly not comprehensive. Will the current level of anti-Semitism, will it abate after the Muhammad comes to a close? So there's a side of us that says yes, that clearly it's a reaction to the Muhammad, and when with the end of the Muhammad, so then the anti-Semitism will abate. So besides the fact that it's always more difficult to, when you buy something, then you have to return it. It's always more difficult to get it back into its original packing than it was to take it out of the packing. So, besides that general truth, the anti-Semitic impulse was there before October 7th as well. It was there before Shemini Atzeres as well. This explosion of anti-Semitism, it didn't happen yesh me'ayin. I mean, if you put a match and there's an explosion, so that means that there was gas there. It means there was fuel there. That means that there was something combustible. Yes, there was a match. There was a spark that put it, that lit the fire, but there had to be something combustible to put the match to. If you put a match to nothing, so the match is just gonna burn itself out. Nothing's gonna happen. So obviously, this explosion of anti-Semitism was not yesh me'ayin. Elamai, it was inhibited. But the more nihilistic American society becomes, the less inhibition there's gonna be. I don't know how realistic it is to think that the anti-Semitism is gonna go back to status quo ante with the conclusion of the Muhammad. I think that's probably wishful thinking on our part. Will it be the same level? I don't know, maybe not, I don't know. But it doesn't seem realistic that it will abate to what was before, because what inhibits those evil impulses, which were clearly present, is certain, moral boundaries within society. When the presidents of the most prestigious universities in the country can equivocate about genocide. So again, that's just an indication of how far the moral nihilism has gone. So where's the inhibition going to be to hold, to check these evil impulses of anti-Semitism? I don't know that it's realistic to think that anti-Semitism is going to revert back to where we were on Hoshana Rabbah. That certainly should give us reason to pause in terms of contemplating the future of American Jewry. In addition, specifically for Shomrei Torah mitzvahs, even leaving aside the fact of anti-Semitism for a moment, just as America disintegrates and drifts further and further into moral nihilism, might there be a pushback? Maybe. So far it hasn't been too successful, and it's a davar shelo bala olam, and I'm not sure it's even what the Gemara classifies as avidei da'aso, something which is naturally prone to happening, the same way a fruit tree, even if it hasn't grown its fruit yet, but the fruit is at least avidei da'aso, it's something which is on track, that it will be a fruit. Whether or not there's going to be a pushback against this nihilism that will reverse course, I guess it's possible, but it certainly hasn't materialized sufficiently yet, and it's not clear at all that one can bank on such a development. Again, welcome as it would be, it's not clear that one can bank on such a development. So even leaving aside the anti-Semitism, which we're not going to be able to, but even leaving aside the anti-Semitism, just America's not going to be a congenial place for a firm Jew to live. I don't know, I could be wrong. I don't see, I don't know, I don't see my grandchildren leaving aside all the mitzvos of Eretz Yisrael and mitzvos yish of Eretz Yisrael, leaving aside all the positive factors, just responding to the negative factors, I don't see them living here. I don't see them raising their families here. So that's something which it's very hard for us to wrap our minds around that notion. It isn't something that within our individual lifespans most of us have experienced. So it's different and it's foreign in that sense. And b'chlal, it's just kind of jarring to imagine that the ground underneath is going to shift and move. But if you look at Jewish history, that's what happens. If you went to a Jew during the golden age of Spain and you asked him, you know, does it seem realistic to you that the Jews are going to be driven out of Spain? So he certainly would have said no. During the golden age of Spain, if he just would have reacted based on his own personal experience, no. Things are so good, and there are so many, the Jews are sought after as advisors to kings, and so we know how the history of Spanish Jewry ended. And if you would have asked a Jew in Germany in the 19th or early 20th century, can he imagine what the end of German Jewry was going to be, or for that matter, all the Torah centers in Eastern Europe? So it was also unimaginable. Because as long as we imagine only based on our personal experience, maybe it is unimaginable. But part of our consciousness is supposed to be our history. Our consciousness is supposed to be informed not only by our own personal experiences of the past 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years, But it's supposed to be formed by the collective national Jewish experience of the past millennia. And according to that experience, so not only is it imaginable, maybe it's even to be expected. These are the cycles of Golus. What does that imply practically? So, first, attitudinally, we need to reinforce the Meshech Chochma writes. V'zev ha'yogo sham, melamed shelo yored Yaakov Avinu, yesterday's Kriya Santora, melamed shelo yored Yaakov Avinu lehishtakeya ala logo sham. Logo is lashon ger, a stranger. So it's especially telling in the context of Yaakov Avinu, because Yaakov Avinu knew, al pi ruach ha-kodesh, that he was going to die in Mitzrayim. So he knew that wasn't just a stop in terms of his earthly sojourn. He was moving there. It wasn't, but still, no, it was Logosham. He was going to be a stranger. Perush, melamed ledoros, melamed shelo yared Yaakov Avinu lehishtakeya. Again, what we quote in the Haggadah. So the Meshech Chochma says, melamed, meaning it teaches a lesson ledoros, not just it tells you pshat in the pasuk. Melamed, it tells us, melamed ledoros b'chol golos v'golos sheyedun shelo yerdu lehishtakeya. Rak logor. A person is never supposed to feel settled, rooted, outside of Eretz Yisrael. V'yiv nechshavim be'ene atzmam lo ke'ezrachem. The nations of the world, we pay taxes, we're citizens, so they're obligated to relate to us as full-fledged citizens with all the equal rights to which we're entailed. But in terms of our religious, not political, but our religious, spiritual, metaphysical attitude is v'yiv nechshavim be'ene atzmam lo ke'ezrachem. So we're lit. Metaphysically, politically, we're citizens, but metaphysically, we're not citizens. So, if one will ask, but wasn't this true before Shemini Atzeres also? Of course it was true. But at times of extreme, one is reminded about basic lessons, which perhaps need to be reinforced. So the first thing we need to do is we need to do our best as quickly as possible to internalize this. It can't be that for any of us it should be unimaginable to leave. It can't be that for any of us it should be unimaginable to move. It can't be that for any of us we should feel so rooted that no, this is who I am. This is where I'm going to be. No, v'yiv nechshavim be'enei atzmam lo ke'ezrachem. So that's on the level of attitude. What does it mean practically, beyond attitude? So obviously, you know, that's something where all the variables and exigencies of life come into play. There's no one uniform answer. Obviously, a person's age is relevant. You know, a 20-year-old who's planning a 50, 60, Yirtzeh Hashem, longer future, which very, very likely means that he's thinking about a longer time frame than it's going to be congenial, if even viable, to be here. So there's one implication for the 20-year-old. What does it mean for someone who's at the other end of the spectrum? So obviously, age makes a difference. Why one is here in the first place, in terms of how quickly one reacts to what we've been discussing is also relevant. But certainly, we all should be mindful of it. We should all be thinking about it. And in the context of our individual lives, again, weighing all the individual factors as we need to, we should be making the plans that are appropriate, again, for each individual, Basher Husham. It isn't a one-size-fits-all answer. It's not uniform, but the reality that we're confronting is uniform. The reality that, I don't know, all indications are that America was once a very great country. It was. But all indications are presently that our days are numbered here in terms of, again, whether it's even viable in terms of anti-Semitism, and even if it's viable in terms of anti-Semitism, whether it's congenial just in terms of the atmosphere. You know, when Revelville was running away from Europe, so he thought this was true already during the Second World War. And so he said he would only go to Eretz Yisrael, he wouldn't come to America. So when he was asked why not, Eretz Yisrael has its problems also. It's not as if everyone is unfortunately, not everyone is uniformly religious there either. It also has its problems. So Revelville said, really, he said, what the situation today is what the Rambam describes in Hilchos Deyos, that if every society is corrupt, you have to go out into the desert and live in a cave like a hermit. He says, but we don't know how to do that, so we have to live somewhere. He says, in Eretz Yisrael, he said, you can lock yourself in your house and you can close the trisim, and you can try to prevent what's in the toxicity in the atmosphere, in the environment, from penetrating. He says, in America, it penetrates into the houses also. So all of us who have lived here since, you know, in the 80-plus years since Revelville made that determination, so I think we disagreed. We were following a view that said, no, that, you know, in America, you can also close the trisim when necessary. But increasingly, it looks like that's not the reality. That again, the nihilism and the immorality is becoming so oppressive. Everything is being legislated and becoming so oppressive that it's just, its days are numbered, barring a radical correction and change in course, that its days are numbered. What does days numbered mean? Does that mean 2 years, 20 years, 30 years? I don't know. You have to ask someone smart to figure that out. I don't know. But the days are numbered. Two digits, not three digits in terms of years. Two digits, not three digits. Its days are numbered, and it's something in terms of what, A, attitudinally, we all have to have the same reaction to that. Practically, is something that each of us has to figure out in the context of his life, his family, etc. And the Baruch Shalom should give us the wisdom, should give us the siyata d'shmaya to figure it out and to make the right decisions in the right time.